Welcome to the very first episode of the Millennial PhD, where we're going to be talking about art, creativity, and radical humanity in motion. I'm your host, Carmela, and our first guests are Dr. Omar Ramadan Santiago and Dr. Carlos M. Camacho. In addition to being doctors in anthropology and sociology, respectively, Omar is an amazing visual artist, and Carlos is a budding screenwriter. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
So you are two of my favorite people around and also kind of my academia comrades. And you're also two people with amazing artistic talents and creative vision for yourselves. We did do a podcast together in 2020 called Play Hype Dialogue, which was a highlight of a very tough year. So you're also my OG podcast buddies. So guys, let's jump in. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves?
All right. So my name is Omar. Carmela said, PhD in anthropology. I met these two clowns in our graduate school. I went to the sociology department to get a break from my people, and I met these two, and I've never looked back. So right now, I have a writing fellowship, and that's sort of paying the bills that I don't have because I moved back home. But, and also I do digital art on the side, usually focused on like kind of mythology and stuff related to my own ethnicity. So I'm enjoying that. And that's sort of my creative outlet to give me some semblance of sanity in these times. So take it away, Carl.
I didn't want to jump in too soon. So yeah, like Carmela said, I'm Carlos, newly minted PhD in sociology. Also, yes, finally, we'll talk about it. Very excited to see what comes next with the creative pursuits, doing the screenwriting thing, as well as doing some side consulting work in addition to adjuncting to pay the bills and figure out my pivot, figure out what I'm going to do next.
Beautiful. Thank you guys so much for sharing. Really excited to call you Dr. Camacho. I want to build on this by asking a question that I've been starting a lot of interviews for the season with, which is, when you meet someone, how do you describe what you do now?
Because I'm newly minted, I have no clue what I'm going to say going forward. But what I've been saying usually is like, I'm a student, I'm a grad student. Occasionally I'll bust out that I'm a teacher because I do teach as an adjunct. But I don't really bring up any of the creative stuff unless I'm with creatives or there's an environment where it feels safe to talk about those creative pursuits. It's not really something that in general we can talk about with more straight-laced academic audiences. Be like, oh yeah, I'm also working on this art project. It's like, and not a journal article and not a book proposal and not any of these other things.
Right. Yeah, that's hilarious. Why do you feel like that is, Carlos?
I mean, part of it's the nature of the beast, like to get a tenure track job, to survive in academia post-corona in particular, like it's the whole publish or perish thing that really gets driven into you in your pre-grad school application process. And then when you're in grad school from jump, they're really driving this into you. Like, this is what you have to do. You must be focused on this. There's no, up until more recently, there's no real conversations about alternate paths with your PhD, ALDAC or non-at gigs, certainly not getting your PhD and then going to do art. Like, no one's really talking about that, but here we are talking about it.
Yeah, definitely. I have mentioned to you guys before we started recording that the full title of this podcast is The Millennial PhD : Creative Survival in Academia and Beyond. And I put that kind of like that term creative survival in there to think a little bit about the fact that I feel like academia really kind of like asks us not to be fully fleshed out humans. And especially kind of when it comes to creative work or like artistic stuff, it's just oftentimes framed, I feel like, as like less intellectual and less important. And I feel like that stripping down for me, it's like it was very depoliticizing, almost like going through 8 or 9 years in the PhD program, and just kind of like having to sector off those parts of myself and see them as like not valid. I don't know. What do you think, Omar?
Yeah, all of that. I think part of the issue is that we're kind of expected, and it's not like we get this from professors. I get it more from like people in the cohort. You're just expected to like be this always working, always studying, always writing and researching. And it's like, if you're not, then it's like, well, then what are you doing? You know, and I feel like we almost set up this weird comparison model where we're just like, oh, this one's published this already. Like, what am I doing? You know? And,
oh yeah, for sure. And I think the reality is right now, as we all know, is that for most people who finish PhDs right now, there's not like a stable full-time job waiting for them in academia on the other end of it. So the other thing I've been thinking about a lot is like, how do we envision new pathways forward, for ourselves as like almost like a generation of academics? Not that this is brand new, because it's been happening for a long time, but Carlos, you mentioned like non-ac and alt-ac, the different terms that come up for what it looks like to use these skills and passions that a lot of us have that are directed toward social change or are directed toward mentorship. Like, I feel like a lot of us went into this because we wanted to work with students, or we wanted to work on political education. So how do we direct those skills that we put all this time into in different and creative ways? Because it's real unstable out there.
Basically, if you have an answer to that question, let us know, because we really need to know.
Yeah, right. Call in now with your reflections. And especially, you know, like, it's very economically unstable. And the three of us have talked about how like a lot of times creative work or artistic work is framed or seen as this like super unstable field or set of fields. But academia is really like just as precarious in a lot of ways.
It's definitely fraught. There's this image that it's this super stable thing that once you get in, you're good, but it's, so I attended a meeting about how to sort of navigate academic promotions at a particular college campus, and the hoops you have to jump through, it's hard, and like you can fail a lot, and that failure isn't really discussed in sort of more open circles the way failure is in the arts or in other realms of like figuring out how to pay your bills. Like, you can fail everywhere. Nothing is really stable, especially, again, we're recording this while the pandemic is still raging on. Like, there's a lot that has been sort of shattered, a lot of illusions about what stability looks like in this economy. And it's like, nothing is stable. So it's about how to figure out that pivot.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the people have been grappling over the last year and a half with many things, and among them is also like the intense burnout and the intense like economic exploitation that people are experiencing at work, with poorly paid conditions, you know, crappy work hours, no real space for like full humanity or full wellness. So I think this is, we're framing it around academia right now, but I really feel like it's something that resonates with a lot of people around our age group, and probably, you know, in any, you know, younger than us and older than us as well, what people are going through. So in some ways I feel like it's like, well, how do we reimagine our survival and the like economic lifelines that we can create for ourselves?
It was interesting because when the pandemic started, around that time, I was taking a bunch of like these online webinars of like new skill, you know, all that kind of stuff. And in the comments, the amount of people who were like, oh yeah, I got fired, and so now I'm looking for something else. Or like, oh, my job is like, it's getting a little shaky, so I need to see what else I can do. People being like, you know, I need to be able to have remote work, you know, as well, just in case. Like, And it was surprising, like, it was people who were like, yeah, I've been in my job 30 years, you know, 20 years, whatever. I thought it was going to be a lot of, like, millennials and Gen Z, just, you know, but I was surprised how many, like, older folk were also in there.
Yeah, and go ahead, Carlos.
No, I was just going to say, like, yeah, it's very widespread in this current moment. Like, a lot of folks are struggling, which is why I appreciate that subtitle to this podcast, to think about creative survival, think about the multiple ways we can pivot and gain skills. So for myself, I took a couple of screenwriting classes during the dissertation writing process to figure out, like, can I do this? Like, because writing is writing. But the types of writing, the way you formulate sentences, the structure is different based on what you're doing. Like, writing poetry is not writing a novel. You're still writing, but it's a different skill set. You have to sharpen your tools in a different way. And so I was like, in case this academia thing don't work, or I no longer desire to do it after this whole dissertation process, like, can I use the writing piece, the way you write observation notes or take interview notes or do your field notes, be able to pivot that type of view of the world and use it for setting up a scene in a screenplay, setting up a scene in a play, doing something a little different, but then also thinking about the skills I have as a teacher, as a researcher, and what those can be used for in other arenas as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like the couple of years leading up to finishing my degree and the years on the academic job market were so, like, harrowing, in particular because, like, it's extremely competitive and it feels like all of your power is completely taken away from you, or you never had it to start with. So doing just, like, knowing that it's coming, the time to go on the academic job market and then going forward and jumping through all of the, like, really intense hoops that are associated with it. And then basically working your ass off to just have some, your prospects for whether or not you're gonna have a career at all in this field be in the hands of, you know, kind of like nameless, faceless search committees at different institutions was, for me, like, extremely, extremely disempowering and stressful, which is probably not, like, news to anybody. But one thing that was a little surprising to me and helpful, Carlos, in the vein of what you were saying about kind of, like, having ideas for how to pivot, was having my, like, dance practice, which was never meant to be, like, the stable economic force in my life, you know, and not that it is like necessarily a super stable thing, but being able to, like, to have dance and be able to kind of, like, teach dance classes or teach dance privates, even just having that, like, I, like, kind of a lifeline, it was like a creative lifeline, but it also allowed me occasionally to have an economic source of some income that was outside the control of these institutions, many academic institutions, which present themselves as, like, kind of progressive minded, but are really elitist and are really exploitative, and are really trying to, like, suck whatever labor they can get out of you for the lowest possible amount. Having that kind of economic creative lifeline was really helpful for me. It was really meaningful. And that was kind of an unexpected piece of the process.
I remember when I was first reading about Khaled Husseini. He's an Afghan author who actually, he was a physician first, and he wrote his first novel while doing that. And so what I love is that, like, sometimes the creative aspect is not even to get out of academia, it's just to have something else that we can, you know, you have an outlet. So right. That you can better if within academia. I actually just checked up on it, and he ended up leaving his practice, you know, since he became so successful as a novelist. But yo, good for him, you know what I mean? It's like, so it sometimes it's just also acknowledging that it's not even like you need to be able to make a living off of your creative, is something like a way to, you know, change it up a little bit, you know, so you get reinvigorated even.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I mean, just to be clear, like it's not, art is not only valuable if you can make money off it. And it's nice to kind of make, as you said, Omar, like just kind of like have that lifeline or have that practice available to you. Even if it is kind of a passion project or a side, quote unquote, side hustle. To me, it even just feels like if I lose my job at the end of this academic year, which is like always up for grabs, like always in question, would I have an economic cushion? No. But would I have a practice that could at least, yeah, we thought I was going to say yes to that, right? I really did. But I would at least have something, you know, like an option of like, well, I guess I'll put my energy there and have something as opposed to, you know, really nothing, because academia is, it's on, you know, for anyone listening that doesn't know, like it's on one basic cycle. So the hiring portion only happens at like one particular time of the year. And again, it's incredibly contingent and incredibly competitive. So it does feel like my heart feels lighter knowing that I can at least turn to my creative practice, even if it would be like, it would be rough.
Yeah, no, that was, I remember when the pandemic hit and all of us were like applying to stuff, and a lot of us of their applications, they were, you know, it's canceled. The position was closed because they couldn't. We went into like a little bit of panic mode of like, yeah, what else can we do? What else can we do? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not even, it's with our creative pursuits, also with, you know, alternative academic pursuits, like just something, because I think none of us really expected what was happening. And right. It was a big wake up call for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think in higher ed and other industries, like things were already bad for workers in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And then of course the pandemic really exacerbated it. And I got my job offer like on the day that we were going into lockdown in the pandemic, and the day that I guess it was New York City.
Worried, I remember you were.
I was worried the whole time from that was March until the day I started teaching, that they were going to withdraw it, my job offer, because that was happening to people too, people had gotten offers that were then rescinded, which is a pretty big deal as well. So it definitely feels extra unstable. So let's pivot a little bit and talk about the fun stuff.
Now that we're like successfully sad.
So. it's rough out there. Omar, can you tell us a little bit about your art? Like, first of all, when did you start making art? And how would you describe what is the medium that you consider yourself? It's digital art, I think, but tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's, you know, I'm going to do that like typical artsy thing. Like, I've been drawing since I can remember, which it's true. I've always been like that kid that, you know, always drawing different, trying different a lot of different mediums. I've done metalwork and sculpture and clay and markers and, you know, wire work. That was a fun phase, but just trying a bunch of different mediums. And it was actually, I never thought I would get into digital art, because there was a part of me that was like, I don't know, that's not real, like there's no pencil and paper. And then I did it, right. I was like, I'm never going back, this is amazing. It was actually a gift to myself. I said, when I finish my dissertation and defend it, I'm gonna get myself an iPad so that I can do digital art. And I did it, and it's been great. And so that's my chosen medium now. And I think what's nice about it is because it makes it easier if you do want to sell it, in my opinion, because with traditional art, you have to find either a very high quality scanner or reproducer or whatever. Whereas with digital, it's already in a file that's easily accessible. And accessibility was kind of like a big thing for me as well, in terms of my art. And so, yeah, I'm now a digital It's weird to say because I'm still very new to digital art, and I'm still trying to figure out my own style, but I think that's a fun part of it is that you kind of experiment mm-hmm. with different styles and like seeing what you do. And you know, the art that I did a year ago looks nothing like the art I'm doing now. And it's nice. And then I'm able to, I you forget that you can still use the art to still be a storyteller of sorts.
I love that.
Create worlds. And so that's sort of what I'm doing now. And I'm getting pretty excited about that. Cause then before I was just like sketching up stuff, and it's nice. I think every artist of any kind should have like a passion project where it's not about sort of just like, well, what will the audience like? It's just like, this is what I've always wanted to create. And so I'm going to do it. So
if somebody turned to you today and they were kind of just starting out expressing themselves through visual art, what are some things you would tell them or recommend to them?
The one thing that you always see like in other artists online is like, don't compare yourself to others, which is very hard. I feel like that's a good advice, but I think it's also really hard in the art world because you're literally just looking at like someone's drawing and being like, wow, I cannot do that. But you know, so I think one thing is, you know, finding artists that you love, but not comparing yourself to them. And then two is your style will develop naturally over time. Like one of the biggest questions is how do I find my art style? And everyone's always just like, just keep drawing. And you know, and it which sucks because it's like annoying, but it's kind of true. You know, and I think a good way is to like look at artists that you like and never copy, but you can, you know, take inspiration and see like maybe there's something about their style that you like that you want to incorporate into your own. Not the entire thing. Maybe you like their line work. Maybe you like their shading technique, their color. You know, obviously don't copy everything. Don't copy anything unless you're practicing. That's like the big thing, like, you know, in the art world. But yeah, and I think it works with like musicians and like all kinds of artists and, you know.
Yeah, I definitely felt what you said about don't compare yourself advice. Mm-hmm. Because for me as a dancer, like I feel like some people develop this understanding earlier, but it just took me years and years to stop seeing dance as like a scale or like a continuum where it's just like I'm you know, I'm this good and so is like this much better, or I can't do this and I have to be the best at everything to have any place in the dance world, not even to quote unquote be successful, but to like have a place here. And I just like years, I'm still deconstructing that because dance is also art, and it's like people, you develop your own style and everybody has strengths and things that they're drawn to or that they lean into in powerful ways. And I just like, you know, I wish that I had had that orientation toward it earlier, because I think there was definitely some years where the stress of trying to get better on like a, you know, 1 to 10 scale, like a very linear scale of what's good versus not good, just kind of, not only was it stressful, but it also like detracted from my development as an artist, I think. Because
call it out now. Basically. What are your strengths? Let's hear them.
Don't do this to me.
I've seen your videos and I already have an idea of certain aspects of your
I mostly like my big strength is like I have like a powerful energy. I think when I'm
I was gonna say your face.
Yeah. No, my face is wild.
Like, do yourself a favor and look up these videos and just ones that you can see Carmela's face, because it is fantastic. I did dance in college, and
yeah, you did.
Oh yeah, I didn't want to shut up. No, but no, the big thing, any dancer, if they have that kind of stage presence and it's showing on the face, that joy, they're automatically like the ones that everyone's looking at, you know, and people I feel like are more intrigued by that than technical Prowess, you know, maybe not like in a competition per se, but you know, no, but I think even in competitions, like the, not attractive. What's the word I'm looking for? Compelling. Yeah, yeah. They're the ones that, you know, like grab your attention, you know. So
yeah, for sure. And I definitely got notes over the years that were like, fix your face. Like, oh, you need to work on your expressions because like what comes out naturally doesn't look right. And I was just like, we do not care.
That was a critique I got in my academic writing, but you're like, it's a little too colloquial and like accessible. And I was like, ah, these aren't problems to me. So I think it's also like what other people consider your weakness could very well be your strength. And maybe they see it as your weakness because they don't have it. So
yeah. And it's always, I mean, it's always helpful to like get a note, but it's also another thing that took me a long time to develop is like, everybody's got something to say. You know what I'm saying? Like every audience member, every like random social media with, you know, the, with art and stuff, every like random social media person that's passing through and happens to glance at your stuff has a thousand opinions about it, or potentially has an opinion to share. And sometimes it's easy to get bogged down with trying to please everybody or being afraid of like really of criticism or critique. But I think that's a learning process and a curve as well. Just like, okay, well, everybody's going to have something to say. So at some point I can't carry it all. I can only take what's useful from that and helpful and move from there. So Carlos, let's talk about you. What inspired you to start taking the screenwriting course?
So I'll try to consolidate the story. So in high school, I went to an art school and did TV and film production.
Wow, so, I didn't know that. That's so cool.
I didn't know that either.
What?
I was mad embarrassed. I was like, oh, everyone knew this but me, but okay, good.
No, because I don't really like, once you get past high school, you never want to be one of those people who's like, well, in high school, I did this.
Yeah, don't tell that to Andrew.
I was saying
I used to ball in high school. I'm like, yeah. Go on.
How many decades ago? No, I'm good.
Yeah, so in high school, I did TV and film production. It used to be called communications, but there was a radio studio. We had a television studio. We did the morning news. So I was really into like media creation. I did a documentary for Buffalo Media Resources' Squeaky Wheel. It was the Portraits of Main Street Youth Media Project. I'm probably butchering the name after all these years. So it's been a desire to sort of do the TV film thing. But when you're planning to go to college as a young Puerto Rican person, as a sort of person who grew up working class, you're not really thinking about the arts as like a potential career, as like a real possibility. So I was like, I'm going to do psychiatry. So I'm going to do psych and pre-med for my undergrad. And very soon realized that that was not for me. So in grad school, trying to sort of survive and deal with the ups and downs of being a PhD student, being a PhD student in New York City who is doing tons of adjunct work to sort of pay tuition and pay the bills, I needed to have something for my spirit. So I developed a religio-spiritual practice that really sort of bolstered my confidence in a lot of ways and was a lot of the necessary healing that I needed. But I needed the art piece to sort of balance that out. So I used to write poetry, so I started doing that again. And I was like, I didn't think about poetry as sort of the way. I was like, well, let me see screenwriting. So there's a podcast, because of course there's a podcast called The Bechdel Cast. And the co-host was teaching screenwriting because she has a master's degree in screenwriting. She doesn't like to bring it up. It's a running joke from the show. So she's like, hey, I'm doing a screenwriting class. Folks, if you're interested, let me know. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Why not? I hope language is okay.
Please.
Okay. So I was like, why not? I should be writing a dissertation, but it just wasn't flowing. I was still doing data collection to a certain degree. So I was like, why not? It would check the box of doing the writing piece. It would do the sort of fulfillment and creation piece. And then it may become a financial thing, which now I'm sort of leaning into and like, yes, please pay me to do this thing. But it just, I needed to do something. And so taking the screenwriting class just opened the possibility, especially not to be shady, but you watch some TV shows on Netflix or you watch some movies on Amazon Prime and you're like, I could do this.
The opinions of Carlos Camacho do not match the opinions of all of us, Netflix and Amazon.
Omar was trying to get hired. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, I've never seen anything I don't like. It's beautiful, all of it. Carlos, I want to do some like dreaming, visioning conversation with you right now. Where could you see yourself taking the screenwriting? In your what's like, what could be the big dream vision there for you?
I mean, big.
No dream. Pressure.
Like, tell us all your hopes and dreams right now.
Now. Speak it into existence. On a podcast
that's going to live forever on the internet. So if I fail.
Or if you succeed, we got evidence. You make the guy that played Shang-Chi and then like had the tweet from when he...
Yes, Lulu.
When you said like, what's your dream? I was like, he's clearly going to be the screenwriter for the Marvel film, La Boriqueña. Boom.
Carlos.
From your mouth to God's ears. yeah, to be honest, and I'm getting more comfortable admitting this, honestly, it's like doing the writer-director thing. Like writing my screenplays and then directing them and bringing them to the screen the way I want without some of the racist, sexist, homophobic fuckery that we critique on our other podcasts and that we do in some of our academic work, sort of calling out the structures that are in play, not reproducing those for the next generation to consume in their media.
How dope would it be on a Playhub Dialogue to be like, and now we're going to be discussing Carlos' film.
Oh my God.
The latest Camacho film coming out of.
You heard it here first, folks.
Oh God.
No, his Oscar win. We have Carlos.
Oh my God, stop. I'm going to cry.
I love it.
But yeah, no, wildest dreams, it would be doing that. And so right now I'm doing some consulting work, freelance, sort of engage with like racial equity stuff and the teaching. So it's like, I don't know.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because I do feel like consulting is one of these like mysterious fields. And that's like a theme in a lot of the conversations I've had with people, people who do write for TV, or they work for, you know, as a music director on Broadway, or even work in the wellness industry. And I feel like these are kind of these desirable careers or projects, things that also can be really mysterious to people. Like, what does that mean? And how does one get started? So Carlos, what are you mean when you say consulting? What are you doing there? And then Omar, we could hop over to you, because I know you do some consulting as well.
Yeah. So part of how I found this particular position, I follow a lot of people on Instagram. So we have a podcast, so I follow people because of that. And then the podcasts I listen to, I follow those people, and then they recommend folks. And so there's like this larger network of like people who know people that you know. And so one of these comedians posted this posting looking for an academic expert on critical race theory and a couple of other sort of subfields and theoretical perspectives. And I was like, I don't know if I'm what you're looking for, but here's my CV, here's who I am, here's what I do. And this particular firm, she liked what I was coming to the table with. So she's like, hey, this is the project we're working on. Can you help us write up this report, do these recommendations? So it's like a little bit of the academic work that I was doing, sort of citing your sources, talking about this historical trajectory, talking about recommendations, but then also it's in this realm of something creative. So it sort of checks multiple boxes. And so I kind of stumbled into it, but I'm sure with Omar, there's a bit more that you can say about that piece.
You don't know me. No, it was honestly, I think with the freelance consulting for me, it was about connections and knowing people. One of my good college was working as a cultural consultant, and I was saying like, that's something I think I can do. So I reached out to him and I was like, listen, I'm going to be honest. I'm very interested in what you're doing. I'm just wondering, you know, what's going on with that? Do you, and he was like, listen, I know you from college. I know your work. I could use like someone like you on my roster, you know, because people hit me up asking me like, hey, do you have someone who can do this and this? And I know that you can do this and I can't. So, and it all started from there. And then I think like with any work thing, it's just like, if you do a good job, they will probably hire you back or will recommend you to people who are looking, and it kind of just branches out from there. It's definitely slow because, you know, there are like moments when you don't get any jobs, and then, but then like, as you keep getting your name out there and people are like satisfied with your work, then it kind of just grows from there. And then, you know, it also leads to like other stuff. Like, you know, you start consulting for like, I don't know, like a role-playing game, and then you kind of like branch out into more different opportunities and different kinds. And, you know, right now it's still in that like kind of freelance, like, hey, hit me up if you need someone, but you know, you never know what you can do with that, you know?
Super interesting. And I do think there's similarities in what you said, which is basically like put yourself out there, connect with people where you can, like let people know about your work if you can. And if, you know, I mean, obviously apply if there's a specific posting that comes up that might be of interest, but I definitely heard a lot of networking, and you know, I think that requires that we put ourselves out there a little bit, which is a little tough, I think, but it can be important. So let's talk about, we can maybe kind of like start to wind down a little bit. I wanted to ask you guys, what would you say is a rose and a thorn of your entire kind of career right now? So you can put academia and whatever this mix of academia and creative work that we all do, mush it together, and like what's something that, a rose and a thorn, I mean something that you love about it or something that's going well, and then maybe something that's not so pleasant.
You go first, Carlos.
I guess one of the roses is meeting people and building relationship and deepening relationships that you already have by having these new kinds of conversations. So meeting the woman who runs the firm that I'm doing this freelance work with currently, I now know someone who's doing this dope work, and engaging with some of my other friends, and was like, hey, I'm not really feeling the academic thing. I'm thinking about pivoting in such and such ways. It's like, oh, really? Cause da. So like having the conversations, things can really sort of grow. And so I guess a rose for me is sort of deepening those relationships, getting new relationships with people. And then the thorn is starting, figuring out how to put the pieces together, how to get things in line in a way that makes sense, being able to sort of switch your hats, going from, okay, I'm writing this academic article to I'm doing this report where maybe having tons of citations and works cited pages like is not as important as like, what's the meat of what can we do better as a company producing this particular type of media? So I think it's just sort of that navigating the different realms, figuring out where to start. And I guess for me, taking the plunge in the first place to say, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I would like to envision for myself.
Yeah, I definitely hear that.
So for me, because as I said, I have a writing fellowship. So the roses, you know, you think you get sick of your dissertation, and you did for a little bit, but then now you're sort of, you get a little bit more free rein to kind of write what you want and work on a project that, you know, you were pretty passionate about for years. So hopefully you still get. So that's a rose for me, like getting to continue working on that manuscript and seeing what develops out of that. And I think the thorn is, you know, kind of still not knowing exactly what the next year will look like. I think that it's different than a lack of stability, because in a sense, like right now I'm stable. But then it's sort of like, if someone asks me, where do you see yourself in 5 years? There's no answer there. You know, it's very up in the air. You know, and I think that that's one of the things, it's sort of like one of the beauties and curses of academia is you could be anywhere, but that can be scary if you don't know where that anywhere is going to be.
Yep. So.
Word. Yeah, I definitely felt all of that. do you all see yourselves, just to like build into what Omar just said? Do you all see yourselves in formal academia in the next couple of years, or still up in the air, or not sure? Definitely no, definitely yes.
Seeing as how I'm applying to jobs, I definitely see myself. No.
Any future employers?
But I'll be honest. I really loved teaching when I was teaching back in grad school, and so I could see myself definitely continuing to do that. And I know professors, you know, in academia who do the consulting on the side, you know. And it's sort of like a nice side hustle. And who knows, you know, maybe it'll develop into something else further down the line. So I basically don't see myself leaving any of these interests. I see myself continuing to do the art, you know, seeing whatever freelance opportunities with the consulting comes up, and also, you know, going as far as I can with academia as well.
Amazing. And still that, like what you just said, Omar, is a world away from, I think, the way that you and I both kind of have felt in some previous years, which is that like all your eggs are in the like academia basket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just that is so, it's like so incredibly strenuous, especially because these institutions are so exploitative and are so repressive. Like, shout out to my job, by the way.
Of Carmela do not reflect the thoughts and views of everyone.
Don't fire me.
Y'all are really trying to prevent me from getting higher. This is what
Carlos, what do you think?
Honestly, this is what I'm trying to figure out right now. I'm applying to some academic jobs. Some of them are long shots. It is what it is. I don't, like, my whole journey the last few years has been, I'll figure it out when I graduate. And I literally, like, we're recording. Can I say we're recording this in the beginning of October?
Sure. Okay. I think you just did.
So we're recording this in the beginning of October. My degree was literally conferred yesterday. So
yes.
Yeah.
So this is very, very new. I'm like, I hadn't thought this far. Like, I really don't know. So that's what I'm figuring out now.
Honestly, he just graduated. Give him a break.
Out of the frying pan into the fryer.
For real. Like, I'll figure it out. So I'm not opposed to anything. I would like to pay the bills so I don't become an unhoused person. Like, that's word. Sort of my line. I'm like, what is paying my bills? I love the teaching. The teaching has always been the best part of academia, for sure. Like, meeting the students, encouraging their growth and development. But how that fits into the larger academic job market is sort of, it varies. It varies by place and time and all that. So I'm figuring it out. So in 5 years, we'll see if you ask me again where I'm at.
Follow-up interview.
Yeah, right? Like, I'll see what's up in 5 years. It'd be funny. I think it'd be really funny to see where we're doing in 5 years and be like, oh, I've quit everything. I've moved to a remote cabin in the woods.
I mean, where it'd be pretty sweet.
Right. My own, like, timber.
Anyway.
I'm just trying to figure out the food situation. I'm like, right? I can't do dairy, so it's like I can't get a cow.
That was timber the first thing I thought of. I'm like, I grow my own fruits and veggies. Like, I grow timber.
I mean, depending on where this cabin is, you got to keep warm, so it makes sense.
Anyway, is there anything besides timber that I didn't ask you guys about that you would have liked to talk about or bring up?
Now I'm getting like how it feels to be someone I'm interviewing for my research, because I'm like, what the hell? Like, I'm like, I don't know how to answer this. You know, because I always ask them like, anything else you'd like to discuss? And they're always like, wait, what? And I'm like, I'm sorry. So short answer, no.
Well, good. Carlos, is there anything else that you would have liked to talk more about?
No, I don't think so. I think you sort of covered the bases. I'm excited to listen to the other episodes that you released to see what other folks' experiences are with their particular realm of creative survival. I guess just to folks listening who are trying to figure it out and figure out their pivot, like, what brings you joy? Like, what, like, wildest dreams? Like, they asked me on this episode, like, wildest dreams, what do you want to do? Like, what brings joy? What lights that fire inside of you? And find little ways to do that. Do a meetup group when it's safe to do so. Go to an open mic night to tell your jokes, read your poems, like, whatever your thing is. Like, even if it's just a one-off thing and be like, I hated that, I'm never doing it again. Like, give yourself a try. It's at least a new experience you can talk about with your friends. Yeah, I guess that's it.
Nice. Kind of an amazing, like, period at the end of the sentence on this podcast episode. I feel like it's like, Carlos is like, find your joy. Lean into it. Other stories, not belongings.
Grow your timber.
Yes, harvest your lumber, grow your timber.
Okay, so that being said, thank you guys so much for being here for this first episode. Next, the next episode is dropping tomorrow, because this is our first week, so we've got 3 episodes dropping, and it features Dr. Nikita T. Hamilton, who did leave formal academia to pursue television writing and has been super successful in that. But before we sign off, you guys, Carlos, where can anybody listening reach out and connect with you?
Follow me on Instagram. It's CarlosCreates2018. That's sort of my main space for my non-academic stuff. If you want to find academic Carlos, it's carlosmcamacho.net.
All right. And Omar, where can people see your artwork and or connect with you if they'd like to?
Don't bother. No, I'm kidding.
let him have his cabin in the woods.
I just told you I am trying to escape from society. No, you can reach out. It's such a long email. o.ramadansantiago@gmail.com if you want to talk. So.
Okay, so that info will also be in the bio for this episode in case you didn't catch that. You can find me, my personal Instagram, at Mela_moves. And you can please follow at the Millennial PhD on Instagram for all kinds of creative humanity, radical humanity, academia adjacent content, and for more podcast episodes. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. See you on the next episode.